Back to another episode of the Randon Podcast with Raffi and Chandra.
Hooray.
Yay.
And if you're listening, this must mean that we've got two regular episodes without too much disruption. Hooray, that deserves another clap. This is a rarity in our podcast. This episode, I thought we should actually catch up because we haven't done a catch-up episode for a while. So I thought let's begin with how are you? So Chandra, how are you?
All right. It has been a little while since the last couple of weeks. There's been a lot of interviews and guests, which has been nice. I've been busy with the iScribe things, but I found that I've kind of gotten into one of these annoying loops where there's lots of things I need to get done, but to help me get things done, I need to hire people to get things done, but I'm too busy to get around to hiring the people, and so I'm caught in this infinite loop,
which is my current problem. But it sounds like, you know, iScribe is going well. Like, it sounds like good problems to have, which is...
Definitely good problems. Problems that are slightly killing me a little bit, but, you know...
So apart from, is this just one of those crunch timing things in the startup world where that's it, this is just taking most of your attention and not much else is happening?
Yeah, it's sort of at that stage where it needs a fair bit of attention because it's at the stage where now the team needs to grow to keep up with all the demand that's coming in. And so as more and more people start to use it, more and more features come in, more and more things break, and more support's needed, all of those sorts of things. So
more and more airplane needs to be built on the way down.
Exactly. So the cliff has been jumped off. The initial framework of an airplane has been built. So it's not going down as fast, but it's still going down. Actually, it's now going down faster because there's a lot of passengers on board, so they need to build even faster. So that's kind of where the airplane's at.
The good thing is that you didn't call your company Boeing.
Hey, what? I hope they're doing well, no?
Well, I mean, they've been building airplanes. Like, I mean, you know, it's like they're just doing it on the way down. They forget a bolt here and there, but is that bad?
There's so many things to remember. Oh.
I mean, it's like an IKEA manual, you know? I saw this little meme once, which was like, Boeing hires engineers who builds flat pad furniture and never questions why there's four spare bolts left over. I was like,
I assume they gave us extras in the back, right? That's how Boeing works, I'm pretty sure.
I was like, wow, internet memes, like, just scathingly on point sometimes.
Since we haven't talked about AI, I wonder if AI came up with that meme.
Three AI minutes, reference 19 here. Seconds.
Thank you. I feel like I was at least 2 minutes too late for that. But anyway.
Fair enough. Yeah,
I did think about, you know, you having on our loading screen using AI to generate some funny videos or something, funny photos or some jokes, but that was vetoed. Like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, you can see why, like, I think last season someone was like, hey, here's something that I've used AI for, since you guys have an AI podcast. I'm like, we have an AI podcast. Every time Chandra's on, somehow it sneaks in. So, yeah, I can see the misconception. This is not an AI podcast. This is an exploration of random, damn it.
Exactly. And AI models and language models definitely do not have a randomness feature to them to vary the outputs. That is definitely not part of it.
All right. What else have you been up to?
Apart from that, the very non-AI thing is, finally, my home renovations, my floating home renovations, are starting to shape up. And
I did wonder, because I'm like, do you mean the boat, or have you actually got another house?
No, that is my house. It's my apartment that happens to be floatable. So I've the countdown timer is on my phone, and unfortunately, it's gotten to that stage where I'm starting to look at the countdown timer fairly often as well, which then makes the countdown timer go slow. It's a bad thing. I distinctly remember when I first put the countdown timer on my phone. it said like 136 days. And I was like, well, that's a lot of days. And so I wouldn't really pay any attention to it. But now, as of today, it's down to 37 days as of the date of this recording.
Oh, wow.
So now I keep wanting to check every day, which makes it go slower.
I'm at 99 days. I also have a timer.
I feel like these timers are dangerous things and just not a good life choice.
Oh, no, for me, it's definitely needed because I needed to. It's my kick up the backside because you've got floating home issues. I have no issues with no home for 3 month issues at the moment.
There's a lot of people in San Francisco who do 5 months now. I'm here. Huh?
Oh, well, yeah, of course. They're totally fine. So yes, I will be, looks like, touch wood, it's all going to plan. I have got my paperwork for the J-1 visa, which I really did not want to do this pathway. But anyway, it is what it is.
You've got immigrant status. Congrats. Now you just need to find someone to give you a green card. The next episode of Randian, Rafi, looking for a green card wife.
Yeah, just don't tell my current wife.
Yeah, she might be upset about that.
So yeah, sabbatical is starting to get real. I will be,
What is your sabbatical?
I almost don't want to talk about it because I don't want to jinx it because it's just so close, but there's just a few things that could still F up.
Give us a little teaser of roughly what's happening?
Yeah. So I am an old person and I've been doing my job for way too long. So for those unaware, Australia is, I think, unique in the world I'm pretty sure we're unique in two counts. We have long service leave, which is not usually done.
We have a lot of holidays. Every tourist destination is full of Aussies on holiday.
But it's like if you're in a government job, one of the perks is that you get this thing called long service leave. I think private institutions can have it as well, but it's not mandated, whereas like government EBAs from my public place has it, where after a certain amount of time, you get extra leave, essentially. But it counts in weeks instead of days. And then there's this other thing called sabbatical leave, where if you've been at one, or like the EBA's changed a bit for bargaining, but basically, once you've been somewhere for about 7 years, you can take 6 months off to go do a project or study or something that you think is relevant that the department or hospital signs off on going, yep, that sounds like somehow you can make it relevant to what you do. And you get to basically pick what you want to do. Like, you do have to do something. You can't just go to the south of France and say,
sailing.
Wine tasting, you know?
Cool.
Sailing,
that's a lot of physics and anesthesia and... Don't you guys go to conferences to ski places because it's high altitude medicine?
Well, I mean, that's just, that's just like the opposite of hyperbaric. So how will you know how hyperbaric works without high altitude?
To do hyperbaric training, i.e. you need to be on a sailboat so then you can dive.
I didn't go down that line, but I've always wanted to do an overseas fellowship. Forever and a day, but just due to circumstances with my parents were both ill, basically back to back around the time that I would have gone, and I decided like I would regret if something bad happened not being able to come back quickly, so I just ended up doing local stuff interstate instead, like anything that was within, it was one flight back home.
But you were jumping out of helicopters most of the time, so it didn't sound that bad.
Well, look when I say I had to do local stuff, I made it as fun as I could possibly do.
I was doing local stuff, as in, sleeping on your couch.
Yeah, your one didn't pan out very well, did it?
No, it was mostly like sitting in my underpants in your living room.
Yeah, this is like, trying to make the unfortunate attempt to go there. So if it all works out, I'm going to be going to Stanford and working in the Anesthesia Innovation Lab. What does that mean? I have zero idea. And I should start...
But it's innovative. Like, this is why it's an innovation lab.
Yes. I mean, they've done some interesting projects, but it's kind of like... So I met one of the guys. My supervisor was meant to come when I was at Houston, but he decided Hawaii sounded better than Houston, so I don't blame him. I don't know exactly what I can do, but so far, the performer of all the things that I'm interested in, they have someone in the department that does that thing. So If nothing else, it'll be a very good chance to just, like, I actually lead the innovation set aside of things at, like, the hospital that I work at here. So the lowest rung, like, how I sold this to the hospital is, like, look, if nothing else happens and I just go, at least we'll have links with Stanford. And if anyone else wants to go, I've done the pathway and I can tell them how to do it. And I'm sure Stanford would be happy to have us, because then they're kind of used to roughly what we're capable of, you know?
Then so you can train other anaesthetists to go and do other things and then leave anaesthetics.
Well, whatever it is, but it's kind of like the pathway, like, just establishing that pathway is like the lowest rung win. And that's what I put as number one. And this is very easy to do. It's just, I just have to see what the pathway is like, right? And if I can do that, it's, I think for my organization anyway, it is something that is beneficial. Like, I think if I were an up-and-coming anaesthetist and I was looking for a public job and I heard that, hey, they had this innovation group and they had links with Stanford, I would definitely consider this hospital over another one, right? And that's kind of like, hospitals have a little bit of a brand game that they play as well to try and recruit up-and-coming anaesthetists so that they don't have staff shortages.
That sounds like a very anaesthetics-related thing.
Huh?
That sounds like a very anaesthetist thing.
Right now in Melbourne, there is such a shortage that you're having to pull these cards. Like, we've recruited, like, okay, so when I started in my department, which is now, albeit a long term ago, this is like 8 years ago, right? So the department had just grown from like 20, 30 people, and I was like number 40. Within a year, we were at 50, and now we are at 70 to 80. Anaesthetists.
Hey, they sound like a startup that's growing.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, in the next 24 months, we'll have a new hospital and have started building the next two hospitals. So we are going to be a department of like nearly 100 plus people very soon. And so, again, you want people that you get along with, but also because we're expanding rapidly with new stuff, you kind of want that sort of more, you want a few like ultra geeky people who are into tech and all the innovative stuff. So we want those people. And how do you make it attractive? This is how I sold it to the department. You know, I had to sell my department on the idea, right? And so the bar was set pretty low. So anyway, sabbatical might be happening. I'm getting all like the last bit of paperwork ready. And if that happens, with even more time.
I was only there for a short period because of the COVID stuff, but while I was there, it was great. It was a really nice place to be. It was very, actually also very random. Nobody seems to know what anybody else is doing on the campus, which also made it really quite cool because you'd chat to 3 or 4 different people who had no idea about each other. And they're all working on exactly the same problem and wasting the exact same resources, but they're all doing it with their own spin. And I think that's one of the things I quite like about the place, because whereas most universities are a bit more sensible, where, you know, things are a bit more centralized. So, okay, cool. You guys are working on this particular angle. Why don't you, you know, collaborate, work together, et cetera, blah, 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 which seems like a great idea.
I would just like to point out that whilst, like, you say this, whilst you say this,
I don't want to collaborate.
I'm like, literally your startup is doing very similar stuff with a slightly different spin on all the other ones that are doing large language models.
Yep. I'm like, nope, I'm doing it my way because my way is the correct way. And you can see why I like this place.
You're like, I've got that Stanford vibe.
It fits my particular way of doing things, which is primarily just my way. But that kind of made it cool because you meet people, you'll be able to meet people who, again, you think they'd be all working together on the same thing, but obviously everyone's got different ways of approaching the same problem. And so I found one of the cool things was just speaking to lots of people, you get to pull together lots of different threads and whatnot of people who are similar but different. I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to it just to have a bit of a break from clinical medicine some of the listeners of the podcast realize that I'm a bit of a workaholic, but I've had a sudden realization on this topic just the other day. So one of the other things that's happened is that it's this week was my birthday week, and it's Ramadan as well. So I've been fasting. And on my birthday, I was like, look, because of sabbatical, I didn't take the birthday off because I'm already using up a lot of favors covering my lists in private whilst I'm away. So I was like, look, it's Ramadan. It's not like I can do much during the day. I might as well just go to work and like wait till like today. I took the whole day off and got a long weekend sort of a thing. And I was like, look, that's fine. I'll just kind of push on through, just do my usual stuff, and I'll save the favors for when I'm away. So on my birthday, I woke up, started fasting at like, what, 5 in the morning or something, right? Or 5:30. Then went to work, like had a 1 hour nap, woke up, went to work, left for work at 7:15, and then I got home at 11 o'clock. So of the waking hours on my birthday, I spent exactly 1 hour and 20 minutes at home. The rest of the time I was at work, and I was feeling pretty shitty about it, right? And I have no one to blame. Like, I could have totally, like, you can see this coming from a mile away, this list. Like, it starts in the morning and goes into twilight reliably every time. And I should have just gone, look, I was just going to be pissed about it. I should have just changed it, but I didn't. And anyway, so the next day I was feeling a bit tired because, again, it was a long day, right? And because I got home so late, didn't sleep well, and I had a PT session. And so I basically breakfast, have a couple of dates, some water, then go to PT. And I say, look, for this month, it's just going to be a bit crappy, but I just want to be regular.
But you're still going?
Still going.
That's
still
good, because I've definitely slacked off quite a bit from, like, eating healthy, but at least I'm keeping up my PT. I managed it.
Yeah.
Despite having, like, a million and one meetings, I get that on the calendar.
Well, that's the reason I want to do it, is because it's very easy to say not. And we had to cancel one session, but it was because the PT was sick, not because I cancelled. So, like, but that's fine.
CPT,
and
then
it was
just too lazy.
Yeah. Look, I mean, then he did offer some other days, but it just wasn't going to work. Like, I basically focused on keeping, like, Wednesday evenings free. And
I found
that's
that
what I,
worked
all
for me
resources...
as well. Like, because I have zero motivation or to exercise, at least if it's a calendar event, I'll just blindly follow my calendar from one thing to the next. I'll be like, oh, okay, because I'm going to the gym. And that's worked. So
I just want to do it like reliably on the same thing every week, and that's what's worked. But anyway, like along the way,
because I'm actually saying near the beach, and I was like, oh, I should go swim at the beach. I have not done that very often. It's literally over there. But in my defense, you can't just get out of the beach and then just have a shower and be at home straight away. You have to walk like 50 steps. It's a long way.
And this, listeners, is how Chandra ends up making his disgusting green mush of a breakfast with sardines. And like, it's like, what? Multiple steps to cooking. Put it all in a bowl. Mush it together.
I did find a good thing, actually. Sardines with combination with pasta salad from Woolies. So sardines, obviously, they last forever. Except my discount ones are finished, so I have to go buy some now. And I suspect that'll be at full price, which is quite inconvenient. But pasta salad does last for at least 3 to 5 days in the fridge.
This segment of Chandra's culinary adventures brought to you by Randint.
I would like to say, however, on the boat, the culinary injection, culinary adventures are very different.
I just love how you have, like, you know, so I remember one of the episodes afterwards, he's like, oh, I'm spending like 15 minutes making a coffee. You have to get the temperature right. And he's on land. Stick everything on a bowl, find it, microwave it, eat it. Why are you even looking what it tastes like? Code.
Yeah, I don't understand people use plates when they don't have time. Like, bowls are far more efficient. Bowls and spoons, that's where it's at. Like, otherwise you need two hands. And then, this is crazy, there's more to wash. It's just very inefficient, people. Bowl with a spoon.
This is why this is not a cooking podcast, because half of the things would be possibly dangerous to your health.
And this is why I pick crew who are excellent at cooking.
Anyway, what I was saying is, like, well, also, is like, you know how you chit chat with your PT when you're like having a bit of a break between sessions? So he was like, oh, like, you know, what other times do you have? And I was like, look, here's my schedule. This is my lightest week, and this is when I kind of had like a scary realization, which is, I don't know why, because I've seen these numbers before and it just never clicked, right? They literally only clicked for the very first time on Wednesday, like 2 days ago, which was, I was like, yeah, here's my lightest week, it's 45 hours. And he's like, oh, that's a pretty heavy week. I'm like, no, that's my lightest one. My heaviest one, and it's a bit hard to calculate, right? Because it's a week that ends with, on Friday, I do a 10-hour shift. Then I go on to on-call Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. I don't know what to put that as, because technically I'm getting paid a retainer to be on call, and it's technically 3 days, but I'm not working consistently throughout the 3 days. I'm on call, right? So if you count it all, then it's a ridiculous number of hours. If you count the number of hours worked, it's not as many, but I'm still not at home. I'm at physically a different site, and the phone could ring at any point, right? So it's kind of like, it's not downtime. Like, you're still kind of tense, right? Because you need to run to do the thing that's, you're on for like ED as well. Well, not ED, but like an urgent care. You can get asked to help out. So like it varies from 45 to nearly 80. And he said, he was like, so that's like a full-time workload. And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, I work full-time. He's like, no, like that week. And I don't know why I never, ever recognized this fact before, but I was like, you're absolutely right. That's the 76 hours in 1 week. Like when I feel like I don't have time, I literally don't have time, right? Like, as in, this is, you know, and for whatever reason, up until this point, I was like, oh, I just need to optimize further, right? Like, as in, this podcast gets
you do, and this, you know, you need to optimize further by just have less work.
Yeah, sounds
like an optimization. But I can't actually talk either, because lately my calendar has been mostly Tetris with, I was like, no more meetings this week, because you actually don't have any actual time. And that's with me like opening up my calendar from like 7 to 10. I'm like, all right, I need to do some interviews. But I feel like sometimes the answer is to do less. It's very difficult to do that.
Yeah. So up until now, and the other scariest part of this entire exchange was, well, I just kind of blurted it out and I was like, shit, this is also true. And I've kind of looked back and been, I don't know how I've done this. This year is the least I've worked, and this is my current schedule.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mention in other years. I was like, you seem to be working a lot. Are you sure about that?
I mean, as in, like, we've talked about this, right? Like, I don't know why it's never occurred to me that it's actually, like, physically not possible to optimize the solution. Like, you know, like, the actual optimization is to work less. So
I think that's why specifically I knew I needed a circuit break on that. And so the boat has worked very well for that. Like, there's only certain things you can do. You can do remote work from the boat, but you can't do too many jobs on the boat. I can still do all the startup stuff.
Yeah.
Which is great. But it just means that there's very tempting offers to do some more pinnacle work. And, you know, very, very tempting offers. But now it's kind of somewhat easy, because I'm like, oh, actually, my schedule for the next 2 years is already booked out. And for me to, for example, come back for a random week in the middle doesn't really work, because I don't know where in the world I'll be at that particular point in time.
Yeah.
How I'm going to even... And even if I actually felt like doing it and it was worthwhile taking a flight from wherever in the world I am to come and do that work for a week and come back, logistically, it's actually quite almost close to impossible, because where I'll be depends on the wind.
This thing,
I can't actually do it. So it's kind of nice, because in a sense, it takes a decision away from me.
Okay, so this is the other thing I was talking about literally today with my wife. It's like, you know, we live in a world where we're striving for increasing options, but after a certain point, and this comes to the random question that I want to ask you later on, is like, getting rid of options is like, you want constraints. And it's like, you know, Chase Jarvis talks about it as well. It's like the constraints is what gives you the creativity or frees you up. Like, it gives you the freedom to do stuff, because when you have infinite choice, you have to still make a choice, right? And going through the options is kind of hard. And there's plenty of evidence on this, that more options doesn't necessarily equal better outcome. Most people just opt out of choosing, right? Like, this was like, there was an American study on...
choice, where basically I think they got to pick a piece of artwork. This was the one where they got to take the piece of artwork home. And half of them, they were told, you get to pick one, that's it, no change. The other half is told you can pick one, but you can take it home. If you don't like it, you can come back, change it, swap it many times as you want. And somewhat, I don't know, surprisingly, unsurprisingly, the group that was the happiest was the group that didn't have a choice. It was just like, that's it, less options.
You know, the other concrete one was in America, they initially, when, so superannuation, right? Like, I can't remember what they call it, the 401k or something, right? Their superannuation plans. So when they first introduced it as a retirement saving thing, there happened to be like four big mutual funds. So the employer allowed you to pick four. They all had one fund each, right? And then
so because of Microsoft.
So then over time, more and more came on and you had different options. So it went from four to employers wanting to be their best employers had like 30, 40. And there's this critical number, something like 15 or something. I can't remember the exact one. Where after that point, like employees, when they started, they got given this choice, right? Got to choose. Now, the American system comes with a thing called 401k matching from a lot of employers, which is a perk where if you put in a dollar, they give you literally a free dollar up to like, I don't know, 10 grand a year or something. I don't know the exact American system. So the perk is huge. You basically get free money, right? For your retirement savings account. No strings attached. It's just, that's it. But because of the options and how many decisions you'd have to look through, their participation rate is abysmally low. Like, you literally cannot, like, the choice is so difficult that giving free money is not enough to...
I'm hearing is that was a well-designed system by somebody whose aim was not necessarily to have people getting free money.
So here's the thing, is that there are
It's a little bit like the Silicon Valley thing of, you know, take as much holiday as you want. Not that we're definitely not going to judge you or anything at all. Oh, you took a day off. Ooh, okay.
Oh, you're one of those
unlimited
people.
Holidays. Oh.
Yeah. It's, so... It's interesting. So I feel like for me, the sabbatical is the constraint. I'm out of my usual environment. I can't do any extra work because I'm physically not in the country for an extended period of time. And I get to sit back and kind of like, obviously do the research stuff, but the personal stuff is kind of like going and assessing from a distance what I want my life to look like. Because just like you, look, when you're busy, you're just on trying to get the basics done. So you can't really make an informed, like a, you know, 30,000 foot view of where you want life to be. You can only make like a next few days, maybe a week. You can kind of make more direct, let's execute kind of decisions, not strategic decisions, without a bit of distance, I find. I just haven't been able to engineer it in this sort of a timescale where it's 3 months away. It was actually 6 months, but I'll be back in Melbourne for the second half. But it'll be 3 months, and it's like a system shock to be out of my usual abode. I'll be living in a different country, doing like totally different people. I know no one there. So it's going to be like system reset, do the thing. And along the way, I hope that I can kind of go, hey, I like these little things here that I'm doing. How can I do more of this back home? And I really didn't miss this or that. And then when I come back, I can go, oh, look. Yeah, these are the things I can kind of change. And it gives me the space to actually make the changes because I'm away for a significant period of time. So I'm really looking forward to that. And also because...
I like to think that, but then sometimes I'm also like, all right, no more startups. Whoops. Here we are.
Well, I mean, so, the thing is...
Sometimes bad habits are hard to kill.
No, I just remember at the beginning of the year, Chandra, decidedly, just before one of our recordings, actually was like, yeah, look, I don't know, maybe like, you know, do I not do anything about this? Yeah, like, I want to have that as an option. And I just started laughing. And he's like, what? I'm like, I love the fact that you think this is still an option on the table. Like, the fact is, it
was possible. There was a possibility I didn't start another startup.
This was always going to happen because it had AI in it. So.
It was quite fun, too. It was quite enjoyable. And the really unfortunate thing is it's something that I use every day.
Well, I mean, you've scratched your own niche. This is like the Silicon Valley story, right? Like, you build the product that you want to use, and if other people want it, that's how you scale. Right? And it's working. Like, you know, like, in fact, this deserves a...
Hey! Oh, we'll see where it goes. Early days, too. But and, I know the nice thing is, at the least, I have solved my problem, so I'm happy.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you know, it's already a win. It's kind of like, you know, me going on sabbatical and just going on sabbatical is the win. The bar is so low for it to be successful that it doesn't matter what the rest of it happens. Like, I don't know, I could go and join a startup over there and be great, but it doesn't have to be for it to be a win. So, like, yeah. And especially the thing that I'm looking forward to the most is also, like, I've been in my organization for long enough that I have, like, portfolio duties. Like, I have to do random things for the department. And one of the most ridiculous tasks that I can't, like, figure out how I've ended up with that I've had to do is do the pipeline for our timesheets to get processed. It's just PDFs that get that payroll would only accept as one email attachment. Now, as my department's grown, as we've talked about, the PDF's gotten bigger. Now it's hit the actual file limit of what an email attachment can be. So we need compressors and this, that, and the other, right? The obvious solution is, like, just take a Dropbox link. So what did IT do? They banned Dropbox.
Love it. See, IT, coming up with creative solutions to your problems. So, no, wait, coming up with creative problems to your solution. One of the two.
Yeah. So literally the secretary has to do two laptops, one on the hospital network, one on her hotspotted to her phone that can actually process our timesheets, right? But we still have the problem where our payroll is actually at a different hospital, so we have to transfer it somehow. And they are very difficult in terms of they wanted one thing. And so finally what I did was we finally switched over to a thing called SharePoint. It's basically OneDrive for organizations, right?
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to set it up. I'm going to just do them a very quick demo. And it's just
it
a
sounds
link.
Like
it's
a very Microsoft kind of problem.
It is a Microsoft problem, but it's also just OneDrive, right? It's just super easy. Huh. So it's just like, look, the simplest I can make it is we change a PDF attachment to one link, right? Like, uh-huh. This trusts no workflow. It's just a transport problem of a large file. That's it, right? This is as seamless as possible.
I do love it how they're like, do you want it as an API? No. Do you want it as a spreadsheet? No. What do you want it as a Word document? No. A PDF specifically.
Yeah, PDF specifically. It's even more ridiculous that, but I won't get into that side of things. So anyway, so I was setting up access. So I was like, look, give me everyone who needs access. It's outside the organization. I'll manage all the permissions. Like, I even went to IT and said, I will take responsibility of this FSUP, right?
Just so they disabled SharePoint. Cool. Makes sense.
No. They actually gave it to me, thankfully, because I kind of went in with guns blazing. But anyway, so I get all this stuff sorted out, right? Then I start getting copied into all these emails. Like, I haven't done anything yet. I've just been setting up permissions, right? And I was like, oh my God. So every time you set up an access, I didn't realize it was sending an email going, hey, you've been added to this thing. And payroll was going nuts, going, hey, has anyone heard about what's going on? Are we getting hacked? Are we doing this? And I was like, shit. So I had like these 10 chain emails. Like, this was all in the last 48 hours, right? Of just people panicking.
So when you told them that you're a Nigerian prince and that they just need to transfer some money, did you get the money?
Just all the timesheets are in my name.
Essentially, that's kind of what you're running, right? You're running this thing where you're sending people an email with the PDF and then getting them to transfer you money. Am I missing something?
Well, I mean, I hadn't even done that. It was just the permissions.
Are you sending people an email with a PDF and asking them to give you money?
No, just click here. Just click here. For no reason.
Is it slightly suspicious that you're asking for your pay in Bitcoin? Come on, believe.
But anyway, the short answer was, like, after a whole bunch of, I had to kind of do damage control because I was like, look, sorry that you got these other emails without context. This is what I was trying to do. I was hoping to just test it out.
Why would you do that? You should lean into it. Sounds fun.
Anyway, so they kind of accepted, right? So I get 99% of the people who were very freaked out by this on board, right? And I'm like, sweet, we have solved, right? Like, we are good to go.
Huh.
This is my day off today, right? Like, I took a day off and I'm like, you know what? Just call me. If there's any problems, I'll sort it out. Like, anytime. Just let me know. Just fix it. Because it's just been, I had to fix this problem on the fly like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. And it just took like half a day. And I'm like, I'm not doing this. Let's just do this. Like, we just can't keep doing the compression thing. You know, it's just ridiculously stupid. And this then scales.
You know, it's ridiculously stupid. Sending a PDF of it.
Okay, that is a fight that I cannot win. I've tried. I tried that battle. So I get all of the external people on board, right? Like the people that I thought were the issue. Then the head of HR for our hospital emails going, I'm not across this. I wouldn't expect you guys to support this because, you know, this sounds really tricky because permissions are going. I'm like, the thing that I've been fixing for the entire last 2 days, dude.
I don't know, man. Like, what if there's a Nigerian scammer asking for this? Have you thought about that?
So anyway,
this does kind of tie in quite well to your next thing, which is what's a recent piece of advice or quote that has been impactful? I'm looking at it now. Can you tell me what your one is, Rafi?
So the thing that it's a quote that I recently saw that I was like, you know what? I really, really do need to take this one to heart. And it's from a guy called Ray Dalio, who used to manage Bridgewater, which is one of the largest hedge funds in the world. And if you haven't, he actually has some pretty insightful things about society and like history in general, as well as just finance.
Book was quite good as well. Like I really like his sort of systems approach to things. Man, resonates well with me.
Just a word of advice here. Most people will not like it. This is very much written for Chandra. It's like, in this situation, do this. It is like, if you could distill
imagine
an organization.
The world systematized. It's just beautiful.
Imagine beautiful. The world. It's not even systematized. It's literally like programming. It's like, if this, then that statements, right?
It's so great.
Most people, I believe this is one of the, I bought him a physical copy, and I think it's one of the very few physical books he might actually own.
Because it's perfect. It's everything is systematized. It's just how it should be.
I read the book and I was like, this is one that I think he'll actually appreciate the physical copy because he hates physical things. Looks like it was correct. So the quote is, maturity is the ability to reject good alternatives in order to pursue even better ones. And
How's that going?
Well, I mean, hey, I have rejected a lot of good alternatives in this week to pursue the better alternative of the sabbatical, because overall,
I don't know, man. I feel like with this, you should have started training some carrier pigeons to send a USB stick over. That would have been great.
Someone actually suggested this, like...
Imagine getting department funding to train a carrier pigeon to send a USB stick across. You could probably actually train that carrier pigeon to also diagnose x-rays, because that's another AI paper, because AI. But you could take your pigeons to transfer the USB stick to the hospital. That
Sir,
would be
you're
amazing.
Looking at this wrong. What I should have said is, like, look, department, I can also double as an Uber driver. I will take your USB drive, okay? 5-star rating, please. I will deliver it to payroll every fortnight.
That would work very well. I bet that would be considered a secure form of transfer.
Someone actually was like, can we just do USB drive? This is so ridiculous. Like, okay, if you could only
imagine
see
if you could get a department-funded Falconeer. Huh? That's an upgrade
what if
on a
there
pigeon.
Was a box that we could drop files into. That's what I want. A box.
No, man.
If there was only a service that could do this.
Nah, what you need is something fast. That can take something from one point to another, like a falcon.
Yeah.
Because then you can have a falconing glove.
Or what if there was a drive, just one drive, that we could share?
Would you point them to that sharing?
So did you have a random quote? So the implementation for me is, the constraint of having the sabbatical has let me actually reject a lot of stuff. Like in the last 24 hours, I have been offered 3 regular lists, some with like really like heads of units, surgeons, like really experienced surgeons that do cool stuff, and others that are like the people starting out that are really good friends. But it's allowed me to kind of say no gracefully, but also to go, you know what, I actually want to take some time out and go, maybe I actually do want to work with these people, but I don't want to make that decision now. In fact, I want to do it from a distance. And that is the ability to reject good alternatives because there might be better ones and I just want the time to think. So yeah, I'm putting my little piece of my quote into action in a small way.
I have another similar quote, which I'm not sure where it comes from exactly, but it's the sort of, you know, it's a no unless it's a hell yes kind of thing.
Oh, it's Derek Sivers.
Ah, right. I was like, yeah,
it's the name of his book. Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing because it does, things do change a little bit because sometimes you're opportunity poor and the right thing is to do to say yes to everything. But at some stage, then it sort of flips around a bit and then actually it's more important to know what to say no to, and it's hard because everything's a shiny object to chase down.
Yeah. It's so his book is called Hell Yeah or No, which I'm sure it's a principle that's come from other places, but that's where I first saw it. So
it's very similar to this one. Essentially, it's all about kind of just trying to focus your efforts.
Random little tidbit here. So before I started seriously considering sabbatical, I chatted to you, and the other person I emailed was Derek Sivers, because he's all about living in other countries and experiencing, because he used to move countries every few years. And so we've been chatting about the sabbatical because he grew up in California. He lives in New Zealand now. So we actually regularly email right now about the sabbatical.
This sounds like a podcast, in case you're listening.
Yeah, and I was going to meet him actually last year at South by Southwest, but he's writing his next book, so he didn't make it. So yeah, there you go. Random fact about an author that I started to, yeah, gliding into the DMs, and it seems to work. Yeah, what's
something, something, 6 degrees of connection. Anyway, for me, I think I don't know exactly where it comes from and what the details of it is, but it's somewhat relevant to me right now, which is the whole concept of sharpening the axe. Because, you know, occasionally...
Abraham Lincoln, yes, I believe.
Is it? Right.
Yeah, it comes up in Stephen Covey's
book. I feel like
book,
that needs to fact check that.
What's
that? It feels like an alternative fact, but sure.
No, it comes up. It's from, you've read Stephen Covey's like Seven Habits. It comes, he mentions it quite a bit, but I'm pretty sure the original quote is actually Abe Lincoln, or one of the early founders of America. Anyway.
Very unlikely to remember these things, but yes. I think for me, the key thing is yes. The best idea is to say no to things, but occasionally, once you need to actually get some things done, then sometimes you do get trapped in this thing where you're essentially, you know, trying to chop down the tree with the rusty axe. And actually, the best thing to do is to spend a bit of extra time to sharpen the axe so you can actually get things done a lot more efficiently. And for me, whilst normally, you know, I'm all about the optimizing efficiency gain, sometimes it's hard when you're in the thick of it and you're just doing things to take a step back and just go, okay, cool. How can I do this in a better way? And sometimes the better way is not necessarily the more fun way as well. So for example, for me, you know, I need to hire more people than I'm doing, but the more fun doing job interviews is not very fun. Coding is fun.
Well, I suppose it depends on who you are.
Therein lies the problem.
And just, I'm looking it up. Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree and I'll spend the first 4 sharpening the axe. Abraham Lincoln. Actual quote.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll spend the first 4 hours like riding a robot and doing the axe chopping for me.
No. Okay. If this podcast is any indication, it'll be 4 hours of Chandra just changing down signing these. Like, I mean, just to get him to press record and start involved no less than 3 freaking emails to himself, right? About random ideas that we came up with. I was like, come on, dude, I need to go to sleep. It's nearly 1 AM. You know?
But it was a good idea. We started that in like half an hour.
Meant to start recording at 10 PM. It's nearly 1 AM. Okay, I'm going to close out this podcast with a random fact. Do you want to go first? Or
sure. Well, I have a very important, as part of my new sub-segment, potato facts. So, did you know that potatoes were the first grown vegetable in space?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen The Martian. Clearly, it was absolutely scientifically
accurate.
They look a little
bit potato-like. 1995, NASA decided that they need to try to, you know, grow agriculture and things in space because, you know, the whole thing was about long-term space travel, how you feed people, all that. And so, you know, what's the most important vegetable? The potato.
Russia,
and they succeeded. Is problem? No, it's potato.
No. Is vodka? No, it's potato now, but it'll be vodka.
So the moral of the story is they know how to make vodka on the space station. I'm not sure.
I mean, who knows? If they had the Mir space station still, it probably was full of vodka.
So essentially, they built a giant moonshine distillery. Love it.
What about you? Oh, mine's I'm holding up a little empty box here.
Is it an affiliate link?
I actually don't have an affiliate link for this, but it is a product that I think people should check out because it's really cool. You know, like, I have an obsession with fountainheads, right? Like, I like reusable pens because I just find ballpoint stuff particularly stupid. But the thing with fountainpoint,
I find other people's pens are my preferred pen of choice.
So fountain pens are like the one way of not losing pens because no one knows how to use them. Even though it's true.
I don't know how.
So
they leak. They're terrible. This pen is a
fine liner, right? So it just looks like a felt tip fine liner, you know, those fine point ones, right? And you go, well, what's so special about this? And the thing that's special is that you can unscrew it, and underneath it, there is a, it's basically this system where it's got a refillable capillary action stem. So I'm just holding this up. Oh. It just looks totally black, right?
It just looks like a refill. Yeah,
and it just looked like a black sort of ink thing. But the actual stem is totally white, and you dunk it into ink, and you can see the ink slowly float up to the tip, and that's when it's ready to write. And so it's this refillable felt tip, feels like a ballpoint pen. And it turns out that if you look up the history of pens, after the ballpoint pen got invented, the early pen makers like Parker and stuff had a whole bunch of these capillary action pens, but it just never really caught on, and ballpoint pens dominated. But now that ballpoint pens are like single use and get thrown out, there's like a few billion plastic pieces around. One design company in the UK, I'll link it below, I just love the product, decided to recreate it, but with a felt tip. So it's got this Japan felt tip. It's very fine liney. You can use it for art. You can use it to write. And it's just really cool. And that's my random
find. It looks like a normal pen.
Yeah. Looks like a normal pen.
I'd totally steal that.
Yeah. Well, actually, you wouldn't.
I would definitely, yep. So in case you're wondering, would you buy the pen? Is that a pen you could steal? Yes, I would recommend that.
Yeah, so if you have this pen, which just looks like a black cylinder, don't give it to Chandra, which is what I intend to never do. And with that, that's it for me. Any other things you want to say?
Potato.
We will see you in the next episode. And as always, like and subscribe. Our followership is growing, and we are going to try and make things even more regular, even though we will be in different continents very soon. We will try to keep up the randint ways. And until next time, stay random.